From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. In the mid-19th century, an offbeat form of spirituality swept the U.S. People turned to mediums and seances, desperate to reach dead loved ones, especially those lost during the Civil War. Peter Manceau, curator of religion at the Smithsonian, describes how the advent of photography collided with the spiritualist movement, resulting in so-called spirit photographs. Manceau has written The Apparitionists, a tale of phantoms, fraud, photography, and the man who captured Lincoln's ghost. Preserving memories through photos, Manceau says, offered new comfort to mourners.
After the Civil War, Americans were contending with the reality of death in a way they never had before, and contending with the hope that technology might relieve that in some way.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. April 1869, New York City. The trial of William Mumler begins. At issue are photographs taken by Mumler, images that show not just the subjects who sat for the photo, but also ghostly likenesses of deceased relatives. These spirit photographs were one token of the era's spiritualist movement, along with seances, mediums, hypnotism, and other so-called dark arts. William Mumler's trial pitted faith against fact, technology against superstition. The testimony of grieving people comforted by these photos was set against the opinions of professional photographers. Showman P.T. Barnum, who exhibited Mumler's photos, was called as a witness. Was Mumler a fraud? Had he taken advantage of his customers? Author Peter Manceau of Annapolis takes on these questions in his new book, The Apparitionists, A Tale of Phantoms, Fraud, Photography, and the Man Who Captured Lincoln's Ghost. Manceau is also the first curator of religion at the Smithsonian Institution's National Museum of American History. Peter Manceau, welcome back.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Before we get to Mumler's spirit photographs, let's talk about the advent of photography. It begins with the daguerreotype.
It does. It begins with the Frenchman Daguerre, who's working on the process of freezing images on first on metal plates and then later on glass plates, beginning in the 1830s. So Daguerre popularized this process, and that's why it has his name, the daguerreotype, which then comes to America with the help of Samuel Morse and other American inventors of the time, who became very interested in this process of what they thought would be a refinement of artistic pursuits. Samuel Morse himself was a portrait painter. And so to a portrait painter, the idea that you could nearly miraculously freeze a person's face forever was too good not to research and to popularize.
I'm struck with your use of the verb freeze because it took a long time to capture these images.
Early on, the exposure times were not measured in seconds, but in minutes, sometimes as long as 20 minutes. And you would need to perfectly immobilize a person in order to capture their likeness. But among the very earliest photographers, they actually said that portraiture would be impossible because there were too many small movements in a human face, not least of all that we need to blink. And so many of the earliest photographs you'll see, people's eyes will be closed, for example. You can't see it often, but their head is being kept very still by a clamp on the back of their neck to make sure they don't move at all. And for those reasons, the first portraits that really became popular were not actually of the living, but rather of the dead. From a very early stage in the history of photography, postmortem photography became very popular. This idea that before you bury your loved ones, you could capture an image that you could take with them into the future.
Samuel Morse himself got interested in Well, I don't know whether it's photography of the dead. He had an experience of death in his own life.
Samuel Morse, as I said, was a portrait painter, and he had his first big commission was the opportunity to paint the Marquis de Lafayette when Lafayette was making a return tour to the United States to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Revolution. Morse was able to travel to Washington, D.C. to paint Lafayette. And while he was undertaking that important work, he was in constant correspondence with his wife, who he loved dearly, who lived in New England. And he was recording all of his experiences in Washington and working with Lafayette, writing back and forth to her. And only as he was there for some time did he receive a letter actually from his father saying that his wife had died very, very suddenly. So Morse had been writing letters to her after she was dead, but of course had no idea that had happened because there was no way of communicating across great distances at the time. So this is one of the inspirations for Morse to pursue this idea of communicating across distances, which leads to his interest in the telegraph, for example, and also to photography, because photography, too, is a kind of a way of erasing distances, is a way of stopping time and crossing, really, that greatest distance of all, which is between the living and the dead.
Let's get back to the man on trial. Who was William Mumler, and how did he get involved in photography?
William Mumler begins as a metal engraver and a chemical tinkerer. He was known in Boston for marketing a cure for what was then called as dyspepsia, which he would sell advertise in the newspapers of Boston. But he became interested in a faith healer who was working in Boston at the time, a woman named Hannah Green Stewart, who also happened to run a photo studio. So it seems in part to get into her good graces or to impress her, he took up photography himself. He learned the art, taught himself the art of photography in her photo studio. And while he was there one day experimenting with taking a self-portrait, so standing himself in front of his own camera, as he would later tell the tale, when he developed a picture he had taken, when he was alone in the photo studio, as the picture came into view on the glass plate, he was no longer alone, but he was sitting next to a girl who seemed to be made of light. There was an empty chair in the room where he stood, and that chair, sure enough, in the photograph was filled with an entity, a ghost. He wasn't sure what this was. He thought he must have made a mistake in the development process. But as he began to show it around to members of Boston's spiritualist community, they convinced him that what he had captured inadvertently was the image of a lingering soul, a spirit who was trying to communicate with the living. So Mumler at this time became the toast of spiritualist Boston, and this is in the early 1860s.
He in this process, from the first moment he saw it to I don't know how many days it took, but at some point he decided, oh yeah, that's my cousin.
That's what he decided. He convinced himself of that fact. And as he tells the story, he presents himself as a real skeptic. He would say that he would even mock the beliefs of spiritualists until he had this experience himself, which he presents as a kind of conversion tale. Only by this exposure to a spirit through the technology of photography did he come to believe, as he told the tale himself. And so this was as much a story about technology, about the newness of photography in the popular consciousness, as it was about changing American religious beliefs at the time.
Well, around the time Mumler became a photographer, there's this movement called spiritualism that was growing in the United States.
Fascinatingly, spiritualism and photography begin to become popular around the same time. Around the 1840s in upstate New York, there are three sisters known as the Fox Sisters. And they have these very well-known spiritual experiences. They seem to have begun with the younger two sisters just being bored in their farmhouse one day. And to entertain themselves, perhaps to frighten their parents, they begin to say that they can hear taps and knocks around the farmhouse. And their parents hear these sounds as well. They can't come up with an explanation for where these sounds are coming from. So the story begins to spread that a man had actually been murdered in their house and was trying to communicate through these sisters. Well, the crowds began to come, first dozens and then hundreds. And these happenings, these rappings in upstate New York became a cultural phenomenon, so much so that the Fox Sisters began to tour the United States, Others who claimed to be able to communicate with the spirit world through a variety of means became popular performers, and spiritualism, which begins as a kind of entertainment, takes off as an actual religious movement. It seems to die down by the end of the 1850s, and yet an interesting thing happens in the 1860s, of course, the Civil War, an unprecedented loss of American life, something on the order of 750,000 Americans killed. And this breathes new life, as it were, into spiritualism at just the time that William Mumler is beginning to take photographs and finding ghosts on his photographic plates.
It breathes new life because people are trying to contact, I mean, the Civil War, more than 500,000 people died. And so people are trying to make contact with folks they've lost in the war?
They are, and it is a nation in grieving. From north to south, never have so many Americans been in mourning and have been so anxious to try and find ever new ways to communicate with the dead. And they are also being faced with, or they're encountering the faces of the dead in a way that was never before possible through the war itself. At the very time that William Mumler is taking his spirit photographs, so-called, the first photographers of the Civil War are on the battlefields at Gettysburg and Antietam. Matthew Brady, most famously, Alexander Gardner. They're on the battlefields taking images of the war dead and allowing those far from the front to see them for the very first time. There is, through this work of photographing the dead, there begins to be a competition for these images because these are what the public most wants to see. And this competition is such that many of the photographers who are working on the battlefields begin to experiment with how can you create images of the dead, going so far in the case of Matthew Brady and Alexander Gardner and other known photographers of the time to staging photographs, to finding bodies on the battlefield and putting them into more photographic tableau, for example, recognizing that Americans were hungry for encountering and holding on to the dead in whatever form that they could.
This is On the Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cass, speaking with Peter Manceau, curator of religion for the Smithsonian's Museum of American History and author of the book we're discussing, The Apparitionists, A Tale of Phantoms, Fraud, Photography, and the Man Who Captured Lincoln's Ghost. So describe the spirit photos that Mumler produced.
Well, it was at the time very popular to go into a photo studio and have your portrait taken. You would go in your Sunday best and you'd sit in a studio and you would hold still for quite a long time as the image was exposed, and you would go away happily with an image of yourself or your loved ones or your children. What was different about Mumler's photographs is that you would go into the photo studio, you would pose as if you were just having an ordinary portrait taken, but when the image was developed and handed to you, you would see behind you, floating above you very often, a blurry image, a face, something like a human form. And some began to believe that they could recognize these human forms. And often through the powers of persuasion that Mumler and by then his collaborator in this, his wife, Hannah Mumler, who had been Hannah Stewart, they would convince people that they recognized these spirits who were floating behind them. So you would come away with a keepsake that showed not just yourself, but the face of someone you recognized and someone that you longed to see again.
So was this something that you specified when you booked your photography appointment? I mean, was there some kind of ceremony? Were the dead invoked and asked to come? Or how did you know if you were going to get a picture of yourself or a picture of yourself and your dead uncle?
Mumler would insist that he had no control over the spirits. The spirits came and went as they wanted to, so he would make no guarantees. He simply relied on his reputation as one whom the spirits were attracted to. The spirits wanted to stand in front of Mumler's camera for whatever reason. So people went to Mumler knowing what they hoped to get, but he would never guarantee that's what you would have. He would say that if the spirits weren't willing today, there's nothing I can do about it. I don't control them. And this, in a way, became his defense against charges that he was a fraud, because a fraud, he would say, would do it every time and would do it perfectly. And yet there was something very amateurish about the way he bungled into all of this that became a fitting defense for the work that he was doing.
And put this in context for us. At this time, could the average family go out and have a photo taken? I mean, was this an elite thing, or was this mass.
They could
mass
by
experience.
This point, and that was a really fascinating thing about the advent of portrait photography. Before portrait photography, only the wealthy would be able to have a portrait painted, for example, and so only the wealthy would be able to have an image of loved ones lost, an image of remembering what your grandfather looked like, for example. So portrait photography made this a much more reasonable endeavor for just for the non-wealthy Americans. But Mumler did charge a premium for the possibility of having spirit photographs. His photographs were several times more expensive than the average portrait photographer would charge at the time.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break here on the record. When we come back, the photograph of President Lincoln's ghost and why he wasn't the ghost the subject hoped to see. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. In the mid to late 1800s, the spiritualist movement, which promoted the idea that spirits were able and willing to communicate with the living, swept the United States. Some turned to mediums and hypnotists to connect to those they'd lost, while others shunned these practices as unscientific or blasphemous. Peter Manceau, curator of religion for the Smithsonian's National Museum of American History, is with us today. We're talking about his book on the spiritualist era and spirit photographs titled The Apparitionists, A Tale of Phantoms, Fraud, Photography, and the Man Who Captured Lincoln's Ghost. Your book follows the career of William Mumler, who produced photos of spirits and was put on trial for fraud in 1869. Unlike some people claiming to communicate with the dead, Mumler never stated that he had special abilities.
No, he did not. He claimed that his wife was a spirit medium, and he hoped that her presence might help him communicate with the dead. But he would never say that he could control the spirits. He thought the spirit world was a world much like ours, and people had free will. They could come and go as they wanted. That's the really fascinating thing about the spiritualist movement. The world that they imagined as the afterlife was a mirror reflection of ours, in fact. There was a prominent spiritualist publisher named William Berry. He published a newspaper in Boston known as the Banner of Light. And he was actually killed at the Battle of Antietam. Many spiritualists in the North enlisted because they felt that spiritualists would help the cause of the Union. They feared that the Confederacy had spiritualists of their own who were gathering intelligence from the spirit world. And so this particular spiritualist publisher, William Berry, did enlist, and he was killed at Antietam. And the medium who was employed by the spiritualist newspaper William Berry published communicated that her former employer had visited her and asked her to explain that he was not able to visit their seance circles very often because in the world to come, he had a new job publishing a newspaper, in fact, for the spirit world. So the world that the spiritualists imagined that we would go to after death looked very much like the world of the living. And in a way, that explains what was so attractive about spiritualism at a time of such social tumult as the Civil War. The idea that something that seems otherworldly could be a place where things would be normal again was remarkably was attractive at the time.
But you also had, at the same time, a challenge by the scientific community. Charles Dickens mocked it.
Yes, it was. Many people could not believe that so many apparently intelligent people took it seriously. And yet, this is an important thing to remember, that it was not just a fringe movement. It was extremely popular at the time. It was among the most popular religious movements of the latter part of the 19th century in America, because it was offering something that many felt at the time that conventional religious beliefs were not.
One of the people whom Mumler photographs is Mary Todd Lincoln. Tell us about her trip to Mumler's studio.
Mary Todd Lincoln was herself a spiritualist, in part because of her experiences, again, during the Civil War. The death of Willie Lincoln, the Lincoln's son, while they lived in the White House, unmoored her entirely. There were rumors that there were seances in the White House with Mary Todd Lincoln trying to reach the spirit of her son. She would say that she believed the spirit of Willie Lincoln visited her at her bedside. He continued to be a real presence to her. And so she, in fact, did visit Mumler during their White House years in Boston, was disappointed not to have an image of her son on the photograph she received. But years later, after the war, after the assassination of Abraham Lincoln, after she had left Washington, she returned to Mumler, and she was able to have a picture taken, very famously, with the spirit of Abraham Lincoln floating behind her, seeming to embrace her from behind. We look at this photograph now, and we see it as a portrait of a woman undone by grief. We see it perhaps more broadly as symbolically as an image of a nation undone by grief, a nation sunk deep into mourning. But to her, it was simply an image that she believed in and gave her solace. And that was the key to really understanding what Mumler meant to so many people. While we look at these images now and they seem to us an obvious fraud, to those who believed in them, they could not be persuaded otherwise.
Does Brady, whom we think of as a photojournalist, represent for you the polar opposite of photography compared to Mumler?
When I began writing this book and throughout the process of learning the story of William Mumler, it was this tension between photographers like Matthew Brady and photographers like William Mumler that really drove me forward, and that remains the most interesting thing to me. We remember Brady as the esteemed creator of American photojournalism, and yet he too was involved in a business that was about creating images that pleased those who were his clients, those who paid him to create those images. In one of the images he took of Mary Todd Lincoln, he knew that she thought herself too matronly. She thought she looked too matronly in her photographs. And so he took it upon himself, working with his touch-up artists after a photograph would be taken, to take a few inches off of her waistline, to arrange her hands just so they seemed a bit dainty. And this photograph, which was in a way half fantasy, half reality, was among Mary Todd Lincoln's favorite photographs of herself.
He photoshopped her.
Before Photoshop, yes, indeed, photographers had ways of altering images to make them more attractive, to smooth out any kinds of misgivings one had about one's appearance. They found ways to do that even then.
That's Peter Manceau, the Smithsonian's curator of religion, here on The Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're discussing his book, The Apparitionists, a tale of phantoms, fraud, photography, and the man who captured Lincoln's ghost. I don't want to give away the verdict of the Mumler trial. This book is history, but it reads almost like a novel, and you build suspense. So tell me this. How did you come to the story of William Mumler?
A previous book I published, One Nation Under Gods, which came out in 2015, told the story of America from the point of view of minority religious traditions. And I realized after I finished that book that I had not written about spiritualism at all. And yet, as I said, in the 19th century, it was a massive religious movement. And so it was a story I thought was important to write back into American history. And so it just became a matter of finding the right person with which to tell that story. And that person ended up being William Mumler. And I think of the fact that today, collectively, we take 1 billion pictures globally. We're all in this business, like Matthew Brady, like William Mumler, of trying to create the perfect image, trying to capture something true, even often through Photoshop or altering images in different ways. So we are all implicated in this business of creating images and trying to create reality, new realities through the way that we preserve the moments we want to remember.
What does Mumler's popularity say about how Americans grieved loved ones in the 19th century?
It says that at this moment, after the Civil War, Americans were contending with the reality of death in a way they never had before, and contending with the hope that technology might relieve that in some way. The 19th century was such a period of technological marvels, from the telegraph to electricity to photography. So many things that had seemed impossible suddenly were possible, and yet they still had to contend with the reality of death on an unprecedented scale. What could technology do for us to relieve us of that burden? That, I think, was the question that was at the heart of Mumler's popularity. It explains why so many thousands believed in him at the time. And I think it's a question that endures until today, in this moment when the formerly impossible seems possible.
How do you think technology today has changed how we grieve?
Well, when you look at social media, for example, with Facebook, which has an estimated 50 million dead users, we are interacting very often with entities which may be creations of memory, or in certain cases may not be real at all. They may be constructed of in some kind of Russian bot factory. We don't know if the entities we're communicating with online are real, genuine people on the other side of another screen. So this suggestion that photography raised in the 19th century, that technology could allow us to communicate and see the invisible, this is something we contend with in a very real way every day. Every time we sign in online, we are forced to ask ourselves, are we participating in something real, or is this something that in the past we would have recognized as a fiction?
Fascinating book. Thank you for telling us about it.
Thank you for having me.
Peter Manceau is the first curator of religion at the Smithsonian Institution's National Museum of American History. He's written several books, including Vows and One Nation Under Gods. His newest title, the one we've been discussing, is The Apparitionists, a tale of phantoms, fraud, photography, and the man who captured Lincoln's ghost. We have more information at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Tomorrow is the 209th birthday of the poet and author Edgar Allan Poe, known for his tales of mystery and the macabre. A toast to Mr. Poe. I'm Sheila Cast. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.